Chris, it is the 300th episode of the Meat House, and I know you've not been here for all 300 of them.
No.
I've only technically been here for all 300 of them. Actually, I think there's a couple that I missed because of other stuff going on. But long story short, this podcast has been going on for quite a while, and I was thinking, how do we commemorate 300 episodes of the Meat House? You know, like, what do we want to do? Well, it's a little early for a, Friss's first year of the Meat House review kind of
I'm
a
not there
thing,
yet.
or a, like a 2025 Meat House in review kind of a thing. Because, hey, happy Thanksgiving to those of you listening at home. But then I got to thinking, hey, 300.
300.
Like that tenuously historically accurate schlocky action movie from several years ago.
Yeah, I remember this.
And, what, why not talk about the way mead is depicted in movies and television and maybe even video games, right?
Why not?
And is this going to be a exhaustively and very like
Comprehensive?
right kind of a historical look at mead and the myths and legends associated with it? No. You know what this is going to be?
What?
This is Mead House.
Of course it is.
Hey, this is Jeff with the Meat House.
This is Chris.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. We're, this is coming out on Thanksgiving, so happy Turkey Day to our listeners. And to those of you in other countries that don't celebrate, Thanksgiving, happy Thursday
Happy
again.
Thursday. Or how about happy whatever you're celebrating today? Because I know some people, even if other countries, they still celebrate a festival
Right.
today of some
Well,
kind,
or
just because.
some there's a different harvest festival at a different time of year, and hope you had a good one, or we'll have a good one. And yeah, this is a yeah. Generally speaking, in the world of history and mythology, there is a reason to celebrate in the harvest festival time period because you want good things to come of that harvest. That's got to get you through the winter. That's part of human culture. That's and we're going to be talking about human culture because we're going to be talking about mead and how it gets depicted in movies and television,
Television.
and we'll probably, kind of sideline video games and books and stuff too, because it's kind of getting a little bit of a sideline renaissance. I wouldn't say it's,
It had a bigger push a few years back, but
it's still there.
it's still there, and it has its own sub current. It's not going anywhere. It's just not as
It's never been a primary thing,
no.
but it's always kind of, I think a lot of it has been, we have had a little bit of a push more into fantasy in the last 20-ish years with like the Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and stuff like that. And the sideline of fantasy is, oh yeah, mead halls and
Yeah.
brave warriors drinking mead
I've
and
actually seen one influencer online saying, I've got enough space for a longhouse. I'm building a longhouse. Now I have to Google how to build a
good
longhouse.
on you.
Good on him. But I will say, a big bend in mead has been the fact that the newest generation of drinkers that has come out, and they don't drink as much. So when they do, they want to drink better. And mead, I may be a snob, I may be biased, but I think mead is better than a standard wine.
I think so. I think it is a, and we'll talk about this. I think it is, was, and has been a prestige drink. And, before we get into this whole digression, we should thank our
We
listeners.
should thank you for coming to the 300th episode. This is, it's okay. I have not been here 300. I've not been here 100.
Not all 300 are available. Several of the first few, including my first appearance, we just don't have those files
Yeah,
anymore.
but the fact of the matter is, I'm a part of this, and it's really cool. It's been around for 300 episodes
Yeah, we are celebrating the fact that we have been around for long enough to do 300 episodes of something, and that's intense,
Yeah,
man.
that's cool.
Whether you have listened to all 300 from the first go when we were like doing live broadcasts, which is how the hell did we the content, like with the amount of editing I do week after week just to make sure that all the
Pauses and ums are out.
right, like, well, and there are still a few I leave in there for the sake of just, it feels like the flow of conversation and it feels natural if I'm if there's an and then I'm sitting there for 30 seconds like
Or that one time I tipped back in my chair and there was a huge crash.
and right, yeah, stuff like that is not necessarily going to
be a part of the show, be helping the show. Yeah.
You know, compared to a live episode, man. And
yeah, but you know, I'm looking forward to we do shows so we call have people we call on the mixing board eventually at one time.
That would be nice too. Yes.
But I'm amazed you guys made it with the live shows. I honestly am.
Right. No, and I think the quality of the show got better as we went to pre-recorded and edited and things like that too. But regardless, you know, we've in whatever format we've done, whether it's pre-recorded or live or, you know, multiple co hosts calling into a single like source on JD's computer or just the two of us sitting around here in the basement, 300 episodes.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you
Wouldn't
guys
be
for
here
tuning
without
in
you
and
guys
listening.
listening.
We, you know, I know I've tried to make the back catalog, so to speak, as available as possible for you too, for you guys to enjoy and get information from as well. And man, I just hope you guys keep tuning in and
Yeah.
keep listening and keep getting something out of this, because this
So
is
thank you. We really appreciate it.
absolutely love you guys for it. Please reach out, please, you know, whether it's Facebook comments or email info at themeathouse.com or however you want to interact with us.
Yeah, tell us about your journey. Tell us how far you're into your journey. I'm
Yeah.
just starting. I've been doing this for longer than you guys have. Whatever, man. But we appreciate each and every one of you, and thank you very much for being here with us.
And hey, Chris, in the honor of our 300th episode,
Yes.
let's do something for our listeners.
Okay.
You have a couple books.
I have a couple of books. I mentioned this last week, and I have a couple of books. I was going through my wall of books at home, and I happened to come across the fact I have a flavor Bible and the Complete Weed Maker. I had two copies of each, and because of this, I am willing to give away those two books to a beginning weed maker to help them on their journey, so they can read our foundation books.
Let's do two giveaways,
Okay.
because I imagine there are a number of people out there that already have a copy of the Complete Mead Maker. Like used to be when I went into Bock's and Barleycorn, if I bought the mead making kit, it came with a copy of the Complete Mead Maker.
You know, I now they have kits out there without a hydrometer. So,
Guys,
yeah, step up.
come on.
But you know, Ken Schramm is the fact that he's retiring for health reasons. It's wonderful. I'm glad he was a part of the culture, and
He's done so much to this community,
this
for this
book
community.
will endure.
Right.
This is still our foundational book, The Complete Mead Maker by Ken Schramm. The other one is the Flavor Bible. What goes with what? And believe me, guys, I've been reading this book and I'm still figuring out how to read this book.
I just like within the last week, I have referenced this book. It is exhaustive and really intense as far as it's like I use this for, you know, baking and cooking, not just mead making. It
Yeah.
is such a treasure trove of information. So, if you want to enter the drawing,
Yeah. You gotta get online.
shoot us a message, info@themeadhouse.com.
Tell us which one you're putting drawing in for.
Right.
If you want both, put in it for both individually.
Yes. Send us two emails, please. In the title or whatever the email, put Ken to enter Complete Mead Maker, put flavor for the Flavor Bible.
Yes, and I've got them right in front of me right now. These are the two books I have never opened.
They are as pristine a book as you can get.
I have made no notes in it, no nothing at all. The other Complete Mead Maker I have is the one I started with, and I don't know how I ended up with the second one, but here it is. The spine is not cracked. It's in excellent shape. Let me help you on your journey.
We will cover shipping costs. You just enter the contest.
Yeah,
And
this is completely on us, guys.
thank you for listening. The other people we need to thank, of course, as always.
Bock's and Barleycorn.
Yes. They've since we restarted this 50 odd episodes ago, they have been our sponsors, and they've been a great sponsor to work with because they ask a little of us, and you know, they are such a good part of the homebrew community that it's great to work with them. We
And we really appreciate their help. Jake, he like we've said many times before, he came to us and said, "Hey, would you like us to sponsor you?" And he did. And I said, "Well," and when I he talked, brought it up to me, he goes, "When would you like to sponsor? When would you like us to pay me to pay the money for the sponsorship?" And I said, "Let me get back to you on that. I need to talk to Jeff because this is just an idea at this point. Now we
Right.
have to hustle."
Well, and you know, I had paid for the web space for a while ahead of time before our first episode came out, just because I was trying to make a website and trying to get like all our the previous episodes like accounted for and things like that, so they were, available when we hit go and had something recorded and ready to publish. And yeah, no, it's been great.
It's great. And Jake and his friend, the guys, his buddies have just been good to us. We have never failed to get an answer, even if it was slightly delayed because they had to look something up.
Right.
Never happened.
Whether you're needing information or equipment or supplies, ingredients, what have you.
Or just help after this isn't working out, what's going on? And you
Right.
take it into him. He's there.
If you have a Mead-related question, you can send that directly to us, and we will try our damnedest to answer. Bear in mind, we are two hobbyists. We're not exhaustively like the most informed, even though I try to be very well informed. Box of Barleycorn is also a great resource for the
Yeah.
same kind of thing, and they are an even better resource if you're looking at something cider or wine or beer related, because it's not exactly my strong suit.
No, not me either. I've said it, even last episode, I said, yogurt, cheese, kombucha.
Sake.
It's all there,
Yeah,
man.
they've got some distilled products. Even though it's not legal in many states, they have the supplies to do it.
Yeah. And because they can do that, we also have the ability to tell you, hey, we can give you, they said, give us this discount code, MHP3. What did I say? MHP10 is the code.
MHP10,
MHP10.
10% off your orders.
Where did 3 come from? I have no idea where that came from.
300.
300. That's got to be it.
Yeah.
It's got to be it.
That mental blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, at least they didn't know what we had planned before we started talking.
Yeah,
Meat of the day is from Oppengard Meadery.
Meadery, not Oppenheimer.
Sorry, just my history took over.
I hope this isn't gonna be a bomb episode.
Details.
So this is a Fyrkat Vulva. I think I'm pronouncing that right. My Germanic is not great, but this is a blueberry cherry mead, and this came just like a week or two ago from my annual quarterly mead release, and it is a
Dark.
dark, deep ruby red.
Yeah, it is gorgeous.
Very pretty.
It take the darkest red wine you've ever seen with purple, and yeah, that's what we got right here in
Yeah,
our glass.
this is, it looks like a dark red wine, and it's like a little bit of red right around the edges where the light catches it. And it's, oh, it's
There's
very,
fruit.
very fruit forward on the smell.
Ah, so nice.
Honey's playing like a secondary or tertiary note in there, but I don't care. It's
Yo.
really, really heavy bouquet.
Thick. It's a thick liquid. It's not viscous, it's thick.
It has a nice body to it,
Yeah,
and
nice.
this is a 14% ABV mead. It has a level of sweetness to it. The balance of it,
Extraordinary.
right? It's, I wouldn't say it's particularly sweet. This is kind of like a semi-sweet, really, but it's,
Yeah, I'm going to call it semi-sweet, but this is a good semi-sweet.
yeah. This is, even if it's, medium on the sweet, it's up there with the tannin and the acid. They're blended very nicely. That balance that we talk about all the time is right there.
This is an exceptional mead.
This is, oh, this is one of the better ones I've
Yeah,
had
same.
recently here. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is. I mean, the only, I didn't think I would like a thick mead like this until now. This is good.
This is, you can tell they went heavy on the fruit here.
They went very heavy on fruit, which I am not mad. You
Yeah.
cannot overdo my fruit.
Blueberry and cherry play really nicely together, and that's no real surprise. They're really nice fruits in general. But yeah, no, I'm really, really liking this. And I think towards the end of the episode, we'll probably digress and have a second bottle, just because, 300th episode, why not?
Why not? Let's party like it's episode 300.
Right. But for all of our myths and portrayals of mead in popular culture, the Viking related meadery seemed like an obvious choice for our
It did. It
mead
did.
of the day.
And I mean, Oppengard Meadery, good job, guys.
Yeah.
I may have to jump on your site and see if I can grab bottles myself.
So
Anyway,
where do we start with the depiction of mead in movies and television and all kinds of other
There
media
is.
sources, not to mention just the mythology and the cultural, you know.
Okay, well, let's go with a little bit of actual myth out there. The real world myth is people think that the Vikings invented meat, and that is categorically untrue.
Right. From a base standpoint, no. We have historical records that, whether it was like we have archaeological evidence, prehistorical archaeological evidence from a number of sources that indicate there was probably some fermentation of honey going on in Africa, in ancient Greece, in ancient China, and we have recipes from a number of these sources that indicate, yeah, no, people have been making, a honey-based alcoholic beverage for a while.
The earliest actual records we have are somewhere like 8 and 9,000 years old, and that's in China, that's in Europe, that's all kinds of places. And Africa, they have things they suspect 12,000 years old. And the fact of the matter is, some of those records say this mead may not have been made by human hands at all. A cask of honey was flooded with water, yeast from the
Right.
air got in and made mead.
Yeah, the presupposed thing is like, hunters were out with their little water skins. They found a beehive and they harvested the honey. They, drank most of the water in their skins and poured the honey in there, and then they were out hunting for a few days. They came home and they shared the honey water with their tribe, and their, everyone was happier drinking around the fire with it, and their women were a little more amorous, so to speak, and people decided this was a great thing.
Mead, guys, but so no, the Vikings were only around effectively just before the 800s until the Battle of Hastings in 1066,
Yeah, that's generally
considered the age of the Viking.
right.
Were they around before that? Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, the Viking age, as most people know it, was less than 300 years.
Right. And well, in popular culture, Vikings and mead are inextricably linked together.
And there's nothing wrong
Well, let's go right in with popular culture.
that.
Movies.
Okay.
We've got a couple Viking movies.
My favorite re reference to mead in the Viking movie was The 13th Warrior with Antonio Banderas.
Which, is it a great movie?
I
Is it a
enjoyed it.
fun movie?
Yes.
Yes.
I enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. It was based off a book called Keepers of the Dead.
Is it Keepers of the Dead or Eaters of the Dead?
Eaters of the Dead. You're
Eaters
correct.
of the Dead. Yeah.
But there was a line there when he was offered a drink by his Viking companion. He goes, "I cannot consume things fermented grain or fruit." And he laughs at him and says, "Yeah, honey, it's made from honey." Which Antonio Banderas' character took it and goes, and drank it. Because it was a loophole. Fact of the matter is, that loophole exists in the real world. Because the culture of that of the Middle East was you cannot drink anything fermented from grain or fruit, wine or beer, effectively. Honey was not known to them, per se, and as a fermentation medium. So they didn't write about it as something you should be restricted from. The strict people of that religion says no, they meant all alcohol. Well, they didn't say all alcohol. So the other people say, yeah, they didn't say all alcohol. They said not of these two, but this is different.
Well, and
Off we go.
I've known a couple of Muslim guys. I had a roommate in college, Ali, that according to, I don't remember if it was like Muslim scripture or just family rules, but he's like, well, I'm not supposed to smoke, but my dad's not here, so puff, puff.
But there you go. Another one of the Vikings TV series.
Yes.
They predominantly drank mead before going in battle.
Which doesn't seem like a great idea.
Not your best. I mean, they were a warlike culture that was very good at the war. They were tough to beat. Even the Romans didn't like fighting them.
Right. And they got around. They got into a lot of scrapes. Generally speaking, the start of the Viking Age is 793. The Vikings raid the Lindisfarne Abbey. It's a tiny little island off the northeast coast of England. And that first raid is what is generally said, okay, everything before this is something else. Here to 1066
1066.
is Viking Age. So
The fact of the matter is, England wasn't England at the time, as we know it at the time. It
Right.
was a little conglomeration of little hovels, villages, people with dirt walls trying to hold land.
Yeah, if you've heard terms like Northumbria and Ulster and things like that, these were petty kingdoms that existed long before there was any kind of unification in the British Isles. And that was tenuous at best, and people were basically holding together these kingdoms. That was the age the Vikings came and conquered.
Yeah.
And I said we get to video games. I'm going to get to video games.
Get it, go for it.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla is very much portraying this, in that you get a map and you get all these little kingdoms, and some of them are cool with the Vikings being there, and some of them are not. And I don't know how historically accurate they really were with that game. I know they tried to present themselves as being fairly historically accurate, but there's a lot of weird mythology involved in, just the background of this game too, that much like, the movie 300, we have to take this with a grain of salt and go, okay, well, this is entertainment, not historical
Yeah,
fact.
because back to my guys, the Spartans wore armor. They wore armor. Not
Yeah.
they didn't go around in loincloths and bare chested. It just that's a recipe to die with. But
You may not be able to show off your impressive six pack with a breastplate on, but breastplate's gonna save your life, buddy.
yeah. But another one they did was Robin Hood by Ridley Scott, and where Friar Tuck was caring for bees so he could make mead. He even said in the movie, the drink that sanctifies men. When people ask, can we try some of your meat and some of your drink? And he goes, for a fee, because it's a drink that sanctifies men. He wasn't giving that shit away.
Well, and I think this is going to tie really nicely when we get to the next one I want to talk about,
Yeah,
which
and
is
this one's y'all yours, man.
this is Beowulf. And
Beowulf.
this was the 2007 with the weird,
Computer CGI.
it was mocap in a weird way. That was they took actors and they did the mocap, and then they made CGI characters from them, and it was an impressive like bump for,
It was a great piece of cinematographic technology. As a movie,
special effects, cool.
cool.
A story,
Eh.
accuracy to the actual story of Beowulf.
Eh.
Like, Grendel's mom is not Angelina Jolie hot. The dragon that Beowulf fights and dies from, probably not the love child of Angelina Jolie and Beowulf. So, yeah, they took a lot of liberties with
lot
that
of
story.
liberties, but no. So,
But,
Beowulf is your personal gripe here, so go.
well, okay. Let's start with the question that I threw at you in the pre-show, and I did not give you an answer for, just to annoy the crap out of you.
And
How many Vikings are in Beowulf?
in my thought, in my mind, it was one, just Beowulf himself. But that's all. I mean, upon reflection, I mean, he'd have to have a few of his men be Viking, but it was never really specified, as far as I know, what he was.
There are zero Vikings in Beowulf.
None.
When does the Viking era start? We just talked about this.
793.
Yeah. When is Beowulf set?
They were Franks.
No.
They're Germanic, or
They were Iron Age Germanic slash Scandinavians.
yeah.
This is occurring in what is modern day Denmark and Sweden. And this is occurring in the 5th and 6th centuries, not like the 8th century
8th century,
to
like
the
the
11th century.
Vikings, yeah.
Right. This is pre-Viking era, so none of these guys were Vikings.
Actually had the means to get that answer, and I couldn't get it.
Yeah, you just didn't draw the connection.
No, I did
But
not.
the story of Beowulf, the story of this big Scandinavian warrior, is so inextricably linked to Viking culture that it's just there. We just accept it, but it's not.
But it is not, they're not Vikings.
That said,
Wow.
when was Beowulf written?
Oh, that's one of the oldest books out there.
No, it was written roughly in the 8th century. It is
Okay.
in the Viking era,
Oh, that's why it's.
and it's part of why it's linked there.
Yeah.
We suspect it is actually like a West Anglian, I think, is the dialect. I could be wrong. It's been a minute since I've looked at it. But we're talking about the east coast of England in all these petty kingdoms that were settled by people from, northern Germany and Denmark and Sweden, in the migratory period before the Viking period. That, the reason we call most English people today Anglo-Saxon is because the predominant wave of migration there was the Angles and the
Saxons,
Saxons.
yeah.
So, yeah, no, this Beowulf story was looking back on historical, semi-historical, somewhat mythological events from 200 years beforehand. There may or may not be some accuracy to the fact that there was a king of the Geats called Beowulf, or that the there may or may not have been a mead hall in Geatland called Hierom, which is where a lot of the initial part of the story takes place. And there is something to be said there because this pre-Viking Iron Age Germanic people, they had a culture where the king, if you will,
We can call him Beowulf, it's a name.
well, and I can't remember the king that preceded Beowulf because Beowulf was not initially the king. It's been a minute since I've read this story or even seen the movie or anything of the sort. But the early part of the story is that there is this king, and the way that the feudalism, so to speak, Hordred.
Hordrid. I looked it up just now because I didn't know either.
So King Hordred, the way that the feudalism works here is that King Hordred has a mead hall that he calls Hierom. And at the mead hall, he has feasting and drinking for his men that owe him fealty, is a support for them, for him militarily, and assumably taxes and things like that are also paid to him. This is feudalism, guys. We know how this works. And Grendel, the monster in the first part of the story, is attacking Hierom, the mead hall. Beowulf comes to the mead hall and kills Grendel. And then Grendel's mother hears about this. She recovers her son's body somehow. Again, it's been a long ass time. So they go hunt down Grendel's mother, and then Beowulf succeeds in killing Grendel's mother. And then in a third part, 50 years later, after Beowulf has succeeded the king and taken over as the king of the Geats, then a one of his slaves goes and raids a dragon's hoard, so to speak, takes a like a chalice or something, gold or silver, I forget which, but it's apparently enough that it attracts the dragon's attention. The dragon attacks. This is again the story, not the movie, because the movie took a lot of weird liberties with this. But so Beowulf says, okay, well, we pissed off this dragon, we got to go kill this dragon, and all of his
As you do.
Last Thursday, last pissed off a dragon in my backyard, had to go kill it. You know how it goes. Well, anyway, they get to where they're going to fa face the dragon. All of Beowulf's men but one freak out and run away. His trusty man-at-arms Wiglin stays to face the dragon with him. Beowulf kills the dragon but takes a mortal wound, and as he's dying, he gives his man-at-arms this hey, this is my final words. And then the rest of his men eventually make their way back to see what happened, and Wiglin's like, hey, you guys are cowards, blah blah blah. But the start of Beowulf takes place in a mead hall. And
So meat took was there.
right
Meat halls were there before Vikings.
right before Vikings, it was part of the culture, and it was this warrior ethos of, it's not necessarily they're drinking before battle, but they are drinking and they are warriors, and they come home to the mead hall and they feast and consume the mead. And
I would think it's more of a celebration afterwards.
you would think so, right?
Yeah,
Right.
that
And
just makes sense to me.
generally speaking, this is where linguistics nerd Jeff comes in,
Okay.
because one thing that I looked into a little bit further in this is the a number of people have looked at consumption of mead from a written sources standpoint. So if you look for whether it's Norse or Germanic words for mead, or cognates of, or compounds derived from, or words derived from mead as a beverage, and you look at stories like Beowulf, or skaldic poetry or the Eddas and things like that, parts of the classic story. When you're talking about warriors and culture and things like that, you find a lot of mention of mead. When you
Sure.
look at public records, when you look at, historical accounts of blah 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 blah, what you find a lot more commonly, what you find almost exclusively in some cases, are there words for like ale or beer or cider. Mead wasn't available as a thing very much for the Vikings. And we look at our modern era, the modern scope of where you can keep bees in Scandinavia and Denmark, not
Very
very
much in the
big.
south part of Scandinavia, very, very low area.
And a lot of like medieval Europe was a minor ice age by comparison. Like probably even less success surviving, bees then. The availability of honey to make mead in Scandinavia at the time, probably no better than it was today. So they were probably getting honey, if not mead, somewhere else. And knowing, the North Sea and right across the way is our friend in Poland that had this gigantic history of making mead.
Yeah, huge.
It wouldn't surprise me if mead was one of the better things to steal while they're out doing Viking raids, whether that's in Poland or in England or France or hell, the Vikings had river journeys all through, Kievan Rus into Constantinople. They were through the Mediterranean. They were all over the damn place in those few centuries
Yeah.
there.
Now that we're not saying the Vikings didn't weren't beekeepers, they had beekeepers. Very few. But not enough to sustain a mead culture.
Right. It was not something that the Vikings were making themselves so much as probably stealing. And realistically, it was not a pervasive thing to consume. It was probably hard to find. It was probably very valuable. Probably went to kings and the high-ranking warrior classes for, important feasts and things like that, rather than just
Everybody.
right the common, hey, it's a Tuesday and I need something to drink with lunch.
Yeah. Even England, they had what was called small beer.
Well, and there is a level of, this people were drinking small beer all the time instead of drinking water. Like, okay, where did you get the water to make the small beer?
Well, the small beer is actually safer than the
But where did you get the water to make the small beer?
though. Rivers, wells,
There had to be good
streams.
sources of water.
Yeah.
And it was, that's not to say it was not uncommon for people to drink a low alcohol, beverage all the time. Because it probably tasted better than the whatever brackish water they were getting, or not brackish water, but whatever, even fresh, good water they had. Hell, like so much of human history has just been, I need calories to continue my survival,
Yeah.
and my children need calories to continue survival. Beer and wine, even in diluted form, have calories.
And a lot of them.
Right. And they store well.
But the fact of the matter is, Vikings had mead. They probably weren't making mead.
Right. And if you look at this comparison between these heroic stories of like Beowulf and the Eddas and the skaldic poetry versus the common day-to-day life, mead consumption is associated with valorous warriors and these conquests and these
And royalty and upper class.
right. And well, let's look at Beowulf for an example. It's written the 8th century, looking back at the 6th and 7th century. There is a level of romance and like how good we had it back then. The fact that there is mead mentioned there, they're talking about this high value beverage that they had access to, and they may have been implying or may have been like tacitly agreeing that no, we had better access to it then when things were better. Or when things were in a more, I don't want to say primitive, but a more historically romanced stance. So to some extent, this idea of, the pervasiveness of mead in Beowulf, when it probably wasn't pervasive in actual, Scandinavia in the Iron Age, pre-Viking era, is kind of like saying, hey, make Geatland great again.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I knew that was your personal one there, but the pervasiveness of mead, I mean, those out there make your mead, it's not a fast process.
No.
Even if, even when my son made that, the cheapest possible mead thing they did, it was a palatable mead, but it wasn't really good. But it still took a couple of months
Right.
for a couple of gallons.
And you're still using honey. If you want to make cheap alcohol, use table sugar. You still got to feed it with nutrient. You still got to use yeast. I suppose you could do just play it by ear and hope, but honey ain't cheap.
No,
It ain't
he's
getting
always been
any
expensive.
cheaper. I think the thing that we can find looking at all these different, appearances of mead in myth and legend and television and video games and all this kind of stuff is that, yeah, mead has always kind of been regarded as a prestige drink. It
And
is,
romanticizes one.
right. It is inextricably tied to warrior culture, even if they exaggerate the degree to which it was probably present in the day-to-day lives of the people consuming it. It had a, even a millennium ago, it had that mystique about it. Like, this is what our brave warriors and our kings drink before battle or after battle to celebrate their success. And, this is fealty and brothership and loyalty and a horn that we will sip and sup and praise ourselves for. And mead is still a prestige beverage.
Yeah, and it always, and in my opinion, because, and again, I've said this before, I'm kind of snobbish about this. I like my mead. I like my worst mead better than I like my best wine. I'll be blunt.
A well-made mead is a prestige beverage. It just will be because it's you're not getting the ingredients for cheap.
Yeah.
You're putting time and effort and frankly moderate to expensive ingredients into it, whether you're going with the Costco honey to get your training wheels on
Or the specialty one that farm way over yonder does a spectral thing.
or 20 bucks a pound like Meadow Foam or Tupelo or whatever
Yeah.
varietal honey you're looking for. Just that by itself, not to mention your 2 to 5 pounds per gallon of fruit you're putting into a fruit mead.
Vegetables are inexpensive. Fruit, not so much.
Even vegetables ain't that expensive in this day and age, girlfriend.
But you see the point. I mean, mead is a wonderful thing, but it wasn't as prevalent as many of these places would like you to think. And honestly, we know Vikings were raiders. They went to get stuff, women, gold. What in the world makes you think they instilled the mead too? Or the
Frankly,
honey?
anything they stole or anything available to them, whether it was beer, meat, cider, wine, whether some of them were traitors, some of them were raiders, anything they could acquire and bring home,
If it
they
wasn't
did.
nailed down, they did it.
If they if it wasn't nailed down or it was for sale, in some cases I know there were just trade groups going
Yeah,
through and
the Vikings had a prestigious trade with the Middle East.
Expansive trade.
They're
Yeah.
expansive. They were huge. I
No, you
mean,
can look at the Hagia Sophia and there are Viking runes carved like 12 or 13 feet up
up.
that just says like this is really high or something in Norse.
Sven was here,
Right. It's shit posting, but it's a millennia old shit posting
Yeah,
and
and they
it's
were there.
impressive.
Yeah. But bottom line, guys, only the elite, only the royalty had the access to what we can make on our own now.
Right. And even then, they don't have it. They didn't have nearly the access to it that stories would probably have you believe. There was probably a level of they were inflating the availability and the prestige of it to say, hey, this king was great because he fed all his warriors mead at this. And realistically, maybe he had mead once or twice a year. Most of the time, he was feeding them ale or cider or
Yeah.
something similar. And realistically, he was feeding them whatever they brought home on raids.
I love mythology, don't get me wrong. I also love history. But guys, this has been fun. For a 3-minute episode, this was a fun little dig. I love it. But you got anything left you want to talk about?
Do we want to talk about some of the weird mythology related to mead? just like the
The everyday world
no
mythology?
like the Germanic mythology or Norse mythology as far as like the origins of it.
Oh, no, we could do
So
that, sure.
some of those stories are kind of wild, like the Mead of Poetry.
The meat of poetry. Go ahead.
So this is one of two like standout stories from Norse slash Germanic mythology that a pair of dwarven brothers created this initial mead of poetry from honey and the blood of a I don't know if he was a god or a demigod or like the whole Aesir Vanir kind of thing really has me
What was his name?
Kvasir.
Kasia, that was it.
Kvasir was his name. They killed him and they used his blood to make this mead. And this mead inspired like brilliance in a poetic and like artistic sense, right? And at one point, like Odin drinks it, and then he gets into some weird mythology kind of shenanigans. You see this in every mythology and blah blah blah. So he ends up turning into a bird and having to escape and craps out a bunch of meta poetry.
Yeah.
And yeah. No,
Now let's be honest. Vikings called mead drink of the gods. You didn't get anything from the gods that was but abundant.
right.
But that's one.
The other is, and I forget the name of his mead hall, but in the ideal Viking afterlife, or at least the
Valhalla.
well, yes, but there is a mead hall that is owned by, I want to say Odin, it could be Thor. I can't remember off the top of my head. I know you're going to look it up now. No.
Valhalla? No, the halls is. I can't pronounce that. It's Odin's personal hall. It's Valaskjaf.
And the one that I saw the other day when I was looking into this started with like VOL or something like that. But so apparently the mythological mead hall for all the good Viking warriors that died in battle and became Einherjar in the afterlife is this big giant mead hall.
I don't know. It's going to take me time to find that.
And it's not that important. The name is not as specific, but if you were a good Viking man, you died in battle, you became an Einherjar, basically like a berserker, so to speak, or
Yeah.
a you died the warrior's death, you got to serve in the afterlife, and they drank mead constantly because on the roof of the mead hall was a goat, and the goat's udders produced all the mead they could drink. Like I don't know where all these lines connected from.
Me either, but we lost a great deal of history in their mythology too.
Right. Well, then a lot of, frankly, history is written by the victors, and so is a lot of the mythology from the era that people said, oh, there are these pagans that believe these this that and the other, and the connection there is tenuous at best.
Yeah.
Like, is that actually what they believed? Is that anywhere close to what they believed? Is this sources from actual believers? Is this sources from captured, antagonists in whatever battle that they were facing? And the Romans were especially bad at this. And there's the reason that, like, if you look at Slavic mythology, for example, there are a lot of corollaries between Slavic and Germanic mythology, and people question whether, okay, well, are these two groups that had a lot in common, and so the there are a lot of commonalities there, or were Roman authors that were interacting with both Slavs and Germanic people using a lack of information from the Slavic sources and just cribbing from the Germanic sources?
Either way, it's possible. I mean, it's more history than I'm aware of,
Right.
so.
We lack the sources or resources to really know for certain.
And
We
I'll and
probably
be
never
quite
will.
honestly, the desire. This is cool information for me. Bottom line, I don't need to know or want to know for that matter.
Neither is really all that important from the sake of, hey, we're going to make some meat and we're going to drink some meat.
Yeah, but the
This is
fact
just
that
a.
meat has always been exclusive. And in modern times, exclusivity isn't necessarily a thing because you can do it. That's why we're here. That's why we do this. But anyway, that's a fun tumble into
Yeah.
the history and mythology of mead.
And I think the conclusion we've came to is mead is, was, and will be a prestige drink. So, for those of you at home, may you May you make drinks worthy of kings and warriors.
Happy meeting, Jeff.
Hey, do I want to go for that second bottle?
Let's go to that second bottle. Also, one other thing we forgot about. When you first asked me, what day do you want to have this show come out? I told you Thursday. And I don't know how fast you realized it because, Thursday is Thursday. And Thursday is Thor's favorite drink was mead.
Well, like it or not, we are already deeply connected to mead just because we release on Thursdays for the sake of, well, we needed to release one day, and Thursday seems as good as any.
And now we are finishing quickly our
Blueberry cherry.
blueberry cherry mead
I'm not going to butcher that Germanic slash Scandinavian name again.
because last week we talked about a mead from my brother-in-law's father-in-law. CJ's father-in-law says, "Here's another one I'd like you to try." So I'm hoping I grabbed the right bottle because this one didn't have a label and it sat in my house for a week or two. So here we go.
Well, we have a bottle cap with BBC on
Yeah, and that's all I got. It's carbonated.
it. Interesting. Even more carbonated in yours than mine. Mine might have faded. Top mine up a little bit. It is a little bit murky as well.
Yeah,
It's not clear.
kind of a brown coffee, light coffee color.
Don't know what kind of coffee you're drinking.
I don't drink coffee. I
Well,
drink
yeah,
tea.
this is not coffee. This is barely tea color. But it's a kind of a an orangey brown, a light orangey brown. It's not nearly as deep as a coffee color, but it is that spectrum. And
I don't know what that smells like. It's a fruit smell. A lot of honey in there.
I'm not getting a lot of fruit or honey, to be honest.
I am.
There is something fruity, but I can't put a finger on what fruit it is.
No, that's why I said fruity. I mean fruit, because I don't know what it is. The other one was better.
Yeah, I taste the carbonation on this.
But I can't tell you for the life of you what that is made from.
There's a little bit of a sour aftertaste. I couldn't really tell you either. It's almost beery,
Yeah.
and that might just be the carbonation and the light flavor of it.
I'll be honest, I'm not as big, I don't like it as much.
Yeah, it's once I swallow and take a breath, I get some carbonation, not carbonation, some fermentation fault to it. There's a little bit of a it's just a hint of sulfuriness that, maybe this fermented a little hot. Again, probably could have fine filtered a little bit better, but the fact that it is carbonated, that may also, I don't know if this was intentionally carbonated.
Fair enough.
Was this stabilized? Did this ferment in the bottle? Or was this an intentional fermentation that then got drier than it was supposed to be? And, it's one of those things that I want to know process more than.
Well, I don't know what this is supposed to be, being BBC is all I got in the gap. But I'm gonna call that nope.
Yeah,
Nah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
could be better.
Maybe better.
So yeah, this is wrapping up our 300th episode. Remember, guys, we have a giveaway this episode. We have a copy of The Complete Mead Maker by Ken Schramm and a copy of The Flavor Bible. Both fantastic resources, especially for new mead makers. But maybe there are experienced mead makers that just don't have a copy of The Flavor Bible on hand. If
If
you
you're an
would.
experienced mead maker, we're not excluding you. Tell me you need it.
Yeah,
Let us know.
this is a thank you to our listeners, whether you're new or old, or first time listener, 300th time listener. Hell, maybe you listen to some of these episodes more than once. I personally don't particularly care for the sound of my own voice. I've already listened to the episode two or three times when I'm done editing, so I'm done listening to the sound of my own voice at that point.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of my voice either. That's why I enjoy listening one more time.
But yeah, no. If you want to enter, send us an email. If you want to enter both, send us two emails. In the subject line,
Meathouse.com. Subject line
well,
is
info@themeadhouse.com. Subject line for the Ken Schramm Complete Mead Maker book, Ken. Subject line for the Flavor Bible, Flavor. Let's make this real easy on you guys. And this is coming out on Thanksgiving, which is the 27th of November. So let's say between now and Christmas,
Yeah, let's make it a Christmas.
12/25.
We'll just after Christmas,
Yeah,
we'll send it.
we'll give you something to start your new year with. So you've got a month to shoot us an email. That should take you all of 10 seconds, really.
Yeah.
And if you want to, in the same email, give us episode suggestion topics or tell us how great we are, or, you know, tell us how dumb this topic was, you know.
27th. Thanksgiving the 27th is when this is coming out.
Yep. So just under a month to enter to get those, you know, please do. And we will, like we said, we'll cover the shipping. We'll get that to you and we'll make this useful for you guys.
And just to let you go, if you guys are listening from out of the country, I'll still ship it to you.
Absolutely.
I'll eat the cost. I don't care. I want you to get the books. If we can possibly get these books to you by mail, preferably, carrier pigeon, unlikely, or train, I'll do it.
Yeah. No, I know we have listeners worldwide. Like, I was surprised at the number of people we have from Brazil listening to us.
Yeah.
And we've got listeners in modern-day Scandinavia. We've got Russian listeners. We've got continental European listeners. We've got people all over the damn place are listening, you know, even if the English is not your first language.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it. Get your book, guys. We'd love to give it to you.
Happy 300th episode.
Yeah. Nice being here.
See you for 301.
Happy meeting.